Thank you. You can tell by our standard address that Mark and I aren't very covert, so we wouldn't do very good in your student bar, would we? We've only got 20 minutes, so we're going to rattle through, but I understand there's an opportunity at the end to ask questions. Please ask us questions. We will answer them if we can. Clearly, we deal in sensitive material, but we will give you a good indication of strategy, how we deal with intelligence, and more importantly, what intelligence is. Now, as Mark's the expert on intelligence, I'll hand over to him to deal with that side of it.
Okay, good afternoon. Some of this presentation was written before the Minister for Justice and the Prime Minister decided to rewrite the law this week. So you'll have to bear with me. And if there are questions on that matter, we can answer them as of 9 o'clock this morning. But we'll see how we go. We were asked to talk to you about intelligence. The world we work in is mainly covert intelligence, although we rely upon open source and public domain intelligence as well. The thing with intelligence is we're not the only gatherers. We see ourselves as the good guys, and the bad guys also seek to gather intelligence every bit as good as we do. Sometimes they succeed, sometimes they don't, and we hope to find a chink in their armour. Intelligence is a huge word, and as Mick says, with 20 minutes we can't go into too much detail, but we will speak this afternoon mainly on covert intelligence. Surveillance, which is one element of intelligence gathering, is controlled by section 48, subsection 2. I won't get too hung up on all the legalities of those subsections. Surveillance is governed by that piece of legislation. It's covert if, and only if, we carry it out in a manner that the person subject of the intelligence operation isn't aware that we're trying to gather intelligence on them. That's the way we will define covert, and that's how Ripper works. So our intelligence gathering. Three main ways of gathering intelligence. We will use CHISIS, which is covert human intelligence sources, snouts, grass, whatever you want to call them, people that are willing to talk to us. We will use covert electronic methods, which is the one that's currently popular in the news. And we will use our normal directed surveillance. Surveillance officers, intelligence gatherers. There are three main methods of covert intelligence gathering. They are all covered by Ripper. Sadly for us, Ripper does not define intelligence. There's nowhere in Ripper that defines or even mentions the word intelligence. It talks about information, which is one of the grey areas, so we have to translate that information actually means intelligence. And that's where we have the problems of what is meant by intelligence. Secret intelligence, as I say, it's acquired against the wishes of the target. Some European countries have to notify people they're subject to intelligence gathering. We don't. And that's what we mean by intelligence. There is other methods available using public domain, such as driving licenses, passport information. But the world we talk about is secret intelligence. Really, it's the same as surveillance. We will follow somebody. We don't want them to know they're being followed. And so intelligence and surveillance in the covert world are in fact two sides of the same coin. And so Ripper does give us our parameters to work under. Now the bad guys do exactly the same. They will carry out surveillance on targets, on buildings. They will watch how people act. They will check depths of windows, thickness of glass for explosion. But being the good guys, we then refer to that as hostile reconnaissance, because what we do is friendly reconnaissance, but the bad guys, they do hostile. And when we submit our report, that's worthwhile. When they submit their report, we charge them with possessing information likely to be use of terrorists. So that's where the two differ. But we both carry out our surveillance and intelligence gathering in the same way. Al-Qaeda, as a blanket organisation, are alleged to obtain 75% of their intelligence off the internet. The Western world is very keen, if you design a new building, to win awards. And they will put the plans for a building on the internet to win those awards. And when you look at them, they will give you the width of the glass, the size of the doors, how you can drive into it, how you can drive out. Wembley Stadium is probably the best example. You could look at the original plans of Wembley Stadium and plan a terrorist attack without ever going anywhere near Wembley. So they're the methods they use. They don't have to have the capability that we have for secret intelligence. Is intelligence evidence? If I'm going too quick on those questions, please jump in as we go along. The normal wisdom is that intelligence is not evidence, and that's from within the law enforcement world as well. Intelligence officers, special branch officers, will say, I don't have to do anything with this because it's intelligence. It's not going to go to court, it's not evidence. That's the wisdom, but that's completely wrong. Once we obtain intelligence and we record that intelligence, that becomes evidential. The person obtaining the intelligence is within the intelligence and evidence chain. And anybody subsequently working on that information, an analyst, a researcher, an investigator, also create further links in the evidential chain. So for us, intelligence, once we have it in our possession, it is evidential. Whether it gets used at court is another issue. And there are lots of legalities around this with PII and telephone intercepts, which still won't be used, depending on the inquiry that comes out of today. But there's a debate going on exactly where intelligence meets evidence. From our point of view, intelligence is evidence. To protect the innocent and the guilty, I suppose, to some degree, there are a number of legislative powers that give protection from us doing what we please. Article 8, the European Convention, Data Protection Act, Commissioner of Surveillance, numbers of powers to make sure we do things correctly. Whether or not they're done with the best will in the world, they have to be compliant with the laws. The laws that are in place to make sure we do will be used against us if we don't. And our senior officers are more worried about civil actions against us than losing cases in court. So those laws are a double-edged sword. They make sure we comply. When we get it wrong, they will be used firmly against us. Intelligence-led. Fantastic headline. All police work is intelligence-led. No one knows what it means, but everything we do is intelligence-led. We were told to come today on our best behaviour, so we put our suits on. Completely wrong, clearly.
Tough intelligence, you see.
See? So, what we have to be is intelligence-led, but we mustn't let the intelligence lead us. We must assess the intelligence before we act upon it. How do we ensure this? Like all good things, we have a plan. The intelligence cycle, greatly debated throughout the world, because every law enforcement agency has its own version of the intelligence cycle. What is clear is you have to have a strategy. Everybody has a strategy. Your own university has got a strategy to get you into the top 50 universities in the world. We were early, we read some of your material. But it works. It's what we all base our work on. We have a strategy in the UK to deal with counter-terrorism, which is known as CONTEST. It's a government-led strategy that was graded as secret. We never used to be able to talk about it until the Telegraph found out. We can now discuss it. So that's a strategy that we operate. And I'm going to have a rest now, and Mick will take you through CONTEST strategy. And as I say, if you want to jump in, he's a bit older than me, so if you shout louder, he'll answer the questions.
Any lawyers in the room? I want to sue him.
Are there any questions on the intelligence cycle before we move on to policy and strategy? Oh, look at that. Good can all see that. That's just a bit of a reality check. That's actually, although it's quite an attractive front page of a newspaper designed to sell that newspaper, it's actually true. Terrorist inquiries post 9/11 have, in the UK, have convicted individuals of planning to commit those atrocities. Shopping centres, a dirty bomb intended to kill more people than 9/11, poisoning the food at football games, although I think that's probably pretty difficult, it's poison already. A poison the water supply, and probably more of interest to the younger people in the room is the target in the Ministry of Sound. It's true, and that is the importance of us having an efficient and effective means of gathering intelligence within the UK policing service. That is a quote, well, this is a quote from the former chair of ACPOTAM when he was given the poison chalice. And I'll read it to you because that's not very clear, is it? A threat that has features that require new strategies, tactics and skills from law enforcers and a new state of alertness and cooperation from our communities. That's the key, cooperation from our communities. Over the 30 years that we were threatened in the UK by Irish Republican terrorism, we became very, very good at dealing with terrorists and terrorist incidents. Because frontline police officers like myself had nothing to do with the intelligence community world, the sneaky beaky people. Basically, we got told to go to an address where you will find, and we went to an address and we found, and a criminal investigation governed by the laws governing criminal investigations commenced. Or a bomb would go off, and that would be a crime scene, and the intelligence would support that criminal investigation. Again, stringent controls. International terrorists present us with a threat unique. We're facing individuals that are determined to die. In fact, they want to die, and they want to take as many innocent people with them as they can. And that's why we as a police service in the UK cannot afford to ignore intelligence. We must assess and act upon that intelligence. Otherwise, there's a strong possibility that people are going to die, and people are going to die in their thousands. Moving now, very quickly on that cheerful subject, to the UK's counter-terrorist strategy. This is cross-government, all government departments must comply with it. Each of the leads, that's prevent, pursue, protect and prepare, all have an intelligence requirement. They're all intelligence driven. Well, we in the police force, because the police force don't like big words, so we refer to them as the four P's. And you might read about them in the paper, the four P's. You might hear police officers talking about the four P's. That's what they are. Prevent, pursue, protect and prepare. The first one, prevent. Again, top of the list, communities. Communities defeat terrorism. That was true of our efforts against the IRA and the Provisional IRA. And it's even more so with our struggles against violent extremism. To keep our communities on side, we must do everything we can to make sure that it is not seen as a religious conflict. Osama bin Laden would love the UK counter-terrorist strategy to be viewed as a religious war. We don't do that. We do everything we can to avoid using the term Islamist, Islamic terrorist and the like. Whatever we do, we can't demonise any factions of the community. And we actually work with newly and recently set up consultative groups to keep them apprised of what we're doing and why we're doing it. And one of the main reasons is to prevent vulnerable Muslim youth turning to violent extremism. The 7/7 bombers, all of them were UK-born Muslims or converts to Muslims. And that's frightening. Something must have gone wrong somewhere for those intelligent individuals to strap devices on them to set off with the intention of killing many, many hundreds of innocent people, Muslims among them. Pursue, again, top of the list, intelligence-led. And that simply means that we as a police service do all we can to detect and prosecute individuals concerned in terrorism. And we've actually developed intelligence-led controls, and frontline police officers are more now actively engaged, or engaged more with the community, the intelligence community, than they ever were. There's far more in-depth financial investigation, because what you've actually got now with international terrorism, you've got atrocities being planned in one country, committed by individuals recruited and trained in another country, and the act actually happens in another country. So it's truly an international problem. And the biggest issue is, how do they get the funds to make their, to carry out their threats? We're looking at new and quite innovative technology to improve our surveillance methods, our intelligence gathering methods, to identify explosives and the like. And we've seen, uniquely in the UK, new bits of legislation that actually impinge upon an individual's human rights. And I cite mainly control orders for that, because a control order, as I suspect you'll hear later on, is based on intelligence. There are no evidential requirements. It has to be credible intelligence, unique in English practice. We in the police and the surveillance and the intelligence world will do all they can to make the UK hostile to the terrorist. Quite frankly, so they'll go somewhere else. Protect. We have to, as a police service, protect our communities. We have to identify where we're vulnerable. We have to look at our resilience to recover from a terrorist attack, and our resilience to deal and prevent a terrorist attack. And that's within the police service. Have we got enough experienced people? Have we got the right kit? Have we got them trained? It's a new and unique threat. People determined and in fact willing to die for the cause. We have to develop new partnerships. And I come back to consultative groups. We rely on the community to give us information, intelligence, to carry out those four strands. And information from the community is subject to the same protection and controls as intelligence. Because if it wasn't, we wouldn't get the community talking to us. The best and easiest method of preventing crime and protecting individuals is high visibility policing. You'll see officers at football matches, public events, wearing those great big yellow jackets. But we have to have intelligence to direct those police resources. So again, intelligence features in all those three. And finally, the last P is prepare. Importantly, we have to prepare, we have to train our staff. We have to develop a multi-agency approach with the health service, with academia, with the fire and ambulance service. We have to together give a positive message to our communities, because the fear of terrorism is often greater, or I should say the fear of crime is often greater than the actual commission of crime. People are more frightened of being a victim of crime than actually likely to be a victim of crime. And we have to prepare to get ourselves back to normal as quickly as possible. And that's where you come to resilience. What are our business plans? If the City of London, if the underground network is closed down, what can we do? Where can we redeploy? All of those fours, the four Ps, all have an intelligence requirement. Because we have to train our staff to deal with a threat. We have to know what the threat is to give out a positive message. And we have to know the likelihood of an attack, where the attack's likely to be, to prepare to get back to normal as quickly as possible. And you'd be pleased to know, which is my last slide, it's a bit Masonic for my taste, but we won't talk about that. And it's really just a demonstration of what the contest strategy is. You can see it's built on a firm foundation of intelligence and communication. That foundation supports the four pillars, the four Ps, which hold up the roof, which protects the United Kingdom from terrorism. And it's all self-serving. Okay, are there any questions on that? There is an opportunity at the end. I'm conscious of the time. I'll hand back to Mark. Thank you.
Well, that SSCT strategy for the UK every department, every business group within law enforcement will have their own strategy. Within our strategy, there will be links into general crime, general police duties, so they all fit together and work. Then the rest of the cycle will just follow suit. The requirements will come from that strategy. Our intelligence requirement will be built around that. There's no point in gathering intelligence if your core functions can't be met. So our resilience and capacity have to be built around that strategy. Evaluation. It used to be we would gather intelligence, it would be put onto a record card or in a computer, and it would sit there until the day that we actually got a hit by accident. Didn't work. Waste of everyone's time. So the evaluation is now done. We have officers dedicated to evaluating intelligence as it comes in. That is analysed, and then we have to do something with it. We can no longer just sit with these computers full of names, dates and addresses. So we disseminate it. We have to find out the right way of disseminating what we know. 2, 3, up to 5 years ago, we wouldn't be sitting here or talking to you now about contest. That was our secret. You didn't need to know. Now we can talk to you. We've got real faces. We can talk into microphones. That's the kind of dissemination. It's not just police to police. Mick talked about communities. There are thousands of communities. You're a community in this room, you're a community at the university, you go home to a community. So it's an ever-evolving way that we have to deal with things, and we have to make sure the relevant people get the information they need. Today we're asked about intelligence. We'll come back again, hopefully in the future, when we can talk about another subject. But that's how we now disseminate. We've had to learn, because it's strange to us. We were very good at keeping stuff to ourselves. Learning to come and talk to different people, different groups, is a whole new way. And then we have to use it. If we get intelligence, we have to be able to deploy our officers to the right place to either prevent an attack, or Mick said prevent, sorry, prepare. We have to prepare when we get it wrong. So if we do miss it and a bomb goes off, then we have to be able to task officers to go and deal with the incident and the evidence and intelligence that comes from that incident. So the use is every bit as important as the other parts of the cycle. An overarching of all those component parts is review. Each section is continually reviewed. Because if it isn't working, it's pointless carrying on. And if we have to change things, change them and implement the new one and let the cycle continue. And lessons learnt. We may learn something from you today. It's not all one way. We may have missed something in this presentation that you're going to give to us. So the lessons learned all go back into that cycle. An intelligence cycle is just continually learning and rebuilding itself.